Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye, live with The Fez. Heck, did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God, you have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live. Intelligent media for the politically aware. From Amman, Jordan, and streaming globally across the World Wide Web, this is The Fetch, and you are live Inside the Eye. Today's date is Saturday, July 29th. I had to look. Saturday, July 29th, and a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones, and a good late afternoon to evening to all of you listening in. I'm a little confused here. Why am I confused? All right. Good morning, everybody. Wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. How's that? The weather here in Amman today, anyways, has been really, really nice. Temperatures hit a high of only 87 to 89 degrees, depending on where in Amman you are situated. However, here at the house in Jabal Amman, we hit a low high of 87 degrees. So we got that lower high. So it got up to 87 degrees here after a morning that saw early morning temperatures down to as low as 66 degrees. So we woke up to a very fresh morning, a very fresh 14 to 15 mile per hour breeze, which has been, looks like it's died down somewhat now looking out the windows here, but it's been pretty much a nice 14 to 15 mile per hour breeze pretty much all day. And that has made for really an exceptionally nice midsummer day. So it's been very pleasant here today in Amman, Jordan. Now, as the evening settles in, the winds should begin to dissipate, which it looks like they already are as I look out the window here. So we're going to look for winds at around 5 miles per hour as we approach the midnight hour. And temperatures will fall to the lower to mid-70s in the hour before and after midnight. So all in all, it's been a very nice day. We're looking for a very, very nice evening. We should see temperatures rising again, though, towards the century mark as the coming week settles in. But for today, no complaints, everybody. It has been an exceptionally nice day here in Amman. Now, again, because of the nature of radio, I have I've shut all the windows, turned the fans off. So it is hot now. I'm actually feel like I need to take my shirt off. It's so sweaty and hot in here because there's just no air moving. But nonetheless, welcome to Inside the Eye Live. Now, what you may not know is today is the very start of the seventh year of Inside the Eye Live. That's right. This is year number 7. We're having a birthday for Inside the Eye Live today. So we started Inside the Eye Live on the very final Saturday of July in 2011. So we've now got 6 years in the books. We've been going strong at a time when we were not the most popular line out there. And we've got some history to kind of go back into time to kind of share with you what it was like perhaps 6 years ago to be online. So it should be kind of fun. We are expected to have Michael Tom Goodrich from Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947. He's slated to be on here at 11:15, more just to say hello, happy birthday, and just kind of have a nice chat, see what he's up to. I know he's got a new book coming out. And then In the third hour, we have scheduled Andrew Joyce from the Occidental Observer. Now, he has not approved the Skype request, so I can't promise you as we go on today now that Andrew Joyce is going to be on the third hour, but he's scheduled to be here, so hopefully he will just go ahead and approve that and be ready to go by the noon hour. So that is all going down today. So it should be a fun show today. We got a lot of fun clips from the past, not a lot, but a fair amount of fun clips from the past, just to kind of share what was going on in the old days back in 2011, believe it or not. And what else? Just want to touch on a little bit. First, join us in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. As always, we ask you in the chat room to share if the audio is coming out okay. We assume it is. But nonetheless, if you can just say hello in the chat room, audio's good, not good, whatever, so we know and we can make any adjustments. But nonetheless, everybody, we are having a great time here. It was 6 years in the books. You know, last week we had a kind of a contentious show. By all indication, everybody liked the show last night. We had, or not last night, but last week, we had two guests on last week. One was Christopher Jan Bjerknes, and he came on. And gosh, you would think I would know. Eric Karlstrom. Eric Karlstrom was a guest in hour number two. But Christopher Jan Bjerknes caused quite a lot of controversy. He stormed off the show last week. He didn't like the fact that I wasn't going to buy into the fake media story of Nick Berg and Zarqawi and all this crap that they like to put out there in our Jewish mainstream media. Apparently, certain people out there who get their news from Times, the New York Times and other mainstream media outlets believe that they're going to tell me certain things that are going on in the Middle East when I'm actually here talking to everybody. And I haven't done so much this year, but I do know I got a call after the show last week, quite frankly, from Iraq. And the guy says, you know, Dennis, younger guy said, we've been following your show and it's really interesting. You're doing a great job. And I got some static and flack from other networks. I guess, you know, we could name it a little bit, not from the network, but every now and then, I guess there's competing jealousies out there. But I was accused of being a Putinphile last week, and that you know, being such a Putinphile made people puke. And I'm like, you know, dudes, you know, it's time to just kind of pull back a little bit. There's a lot more complexities going on than quote unquote a lot of these researchers want to say, and that's all fine and dandy. You're entitled to your opinion, but you know, obviously we are going to respond if we feel a need to respond. I don't think there's really a need other than kind of entertainment to respond. Let's just be clear on this, Christopher Jan Bjerknes. You know, I watched his pattern, what he was doing on various interviews out there with Red Ice and with Brandon Martinez, which, quite frankly, that interview I wasn't even remotely impressed with. That's why I wanted to get him on, just to try to counter some of the obvious disinformation that I saw going out there. And one of this is that we see a lot of movement out there in. First, good morning. I don't know. Am I getting going too fast here, everybody? It's like, where's Fetch at? It's like, where's Fetch going? It's too early in the morning for this. But you know, I had. Let me just go on with this story because I just want to get it out. You know, I've been. If you look at what's going on out there in the alternative dissident movement, you got a guy by the name of Tommy Robinson. I believe his name's Tommy Robinson. To all our UK folks out there, you know who this guy is. He's a really big guy. You're the English Defense League. He was part of the founder of the English Defense League. He gets a lot of coverage. He spends a lot of time with Sikhs. He is exceedingly anti-Islam. I mean, not a little bit. He's exceedingly anti-Islam. And I don't have a problem with that because there are problems within the Islamic community based on what the European governments are importing. To give an example, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, I went to a place in a, it's a picnic area. There's a little tiny stream, and you kind of put your plastic chairs in the stream, and you bring out your drinks and your argila, and yes, you can drink there as long as you're polite, and you relax, and you can go swimming. And I went swimming a couple weeks ago, and there were some of the kids, 15, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. They get a lot of indoctrination in the mosques, and you know, it's all Quran, 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 Allah, Allah, Allah. And even local Islamic people here, even the kids will call them Majnoon. Majnoon meaning crazy. These are crazy people. So we were not comfortable at all a couple weeks ago because there were a lot of these Majnoons, crazy people. Now, if you get into a part of the UK or in Sweden or Germany and you have this type of Majnoon, they're called Majnoon crazy here locally, everybody. So if you call them crazy, don't worry about being offensive to this or offensive to that. People get it. Look, the good people of the world, and we're everywhere. Whether you like it or not, we're everywhere. That doesn't mean we give our countries over to people from other countries. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there's good people everywhere. And there's if they're calling their own people Majnoon, there's no reason why you should fear calling them Majnoon. But at a certain level of the political dialogue, we have to start to separate between just going after a particular ethnic group and then focusing on the political agendas that are driving the very issues you're talking about. And this, going back to this Tommy Robinson character, everything he puts out there is like, Islam is bad, Islam is bad. But dude, you've got a platform, you've got a forum. Why aren't you talking about how it is Jewish groups that are enabling this within your country? Why don't you talk about how it is Jewish groups that are raising the money, creating the laws, creating all the political environment necessary for mass immigration? But Tommy Robinson doesn't do that. And that's not just Tommy Robinson. There's a lot of people. And of course, this is something we are all noticing out there in the dissident / alternative media. So when you had a Christopher Jan Bjerknes come on last week, that was basically his line. You know, I've seen a lot of people out there in the alternative media. They seem so anti-Islam and this and that. But he didn't want to direct the energy towards the Jewish population. He wanted to direct the energy towards Putin. Putin is bad. Putin's sick. He can barely hang on to his country. But he's so powerful in a lot of these people's minds out there that he's not only running Syrian, he's not just running Russian foreign policy. He's running German foreign policy. He's running American foreign policy. And really, how idiotic do we have to get to start to believe that Putin is running American foreign policy? The foreign policy nutcases running America right now go all the way back to their times, 1975, 76, entering into the Reagan administration, becoming the neocons, getting kicked out under Clinton, coming back into the circle with Bush. But no, Putin's to blame, everybody. Putin's to blame. And I thought, you know, come on, even Putin. Now, Putin, I'm not a big fan of Putin on certain issues at all. First of all, I like nationalism. He has taken a firm stance against the media, for instance. Now, why would you be out there criticizing the English Wolfgang, English guy Wolfgang is Tommy Robinson. Tommy Robinson, something or other on Twitter, but Tommy Robinson, yes. And he's kind of like, whatever. Anyways, let me get back to this issue about Russia, Putin. See, look, Putin has like targeted the targeting of children with gay pornography, with homosexual, LGBT, transgender type of stuff. Now, how can you not support this activity? I'm just curious. What is so bad about this guy that he does that? If you want to talk about Chechnya, look, there was a civil war, and Putin decided to get involved in that civil war. Deal with it, guys. You don't have to sit there and try to make Putin out to be some thug. Oh, he's a thug. You want to deal with a thug? Storm off somebody's show because it's not quite going your way. because you wanted to put an agenda forward that just didn't quite match your point of view. And what I found funny is because I'll name names here. Nick Sparrow gave me, I like Nick. I think he does a great job researching and sometimes even listens to my show. But Nick, I can't understand, why are you going after me? Here's a guy by the name of Christopher Jan Bjerknes who's on Brandon Martinez, and they're going after all the folks over at Renegade because they're just a bunch of putinphiles. So Christopher Bjerknes, that's what's funny about this. You had a Christopher Bjerknes. I don't even know the guy, quite frankly. He's a nobody in my book. He doesn't mean rats this or rats that. I don't care about this guy other than he is part of the dissident, quote unquote, dissident. I'm going to put that in quotations. He's part of this dissident movement, and he's being given platforms on various circles. But it was funny. He's talking about how, you know, the Renegade folks are all Putin on the Putin's payroll. I'm like, okay, that's interesting, because I've known Kyle a long time. I can't believe Kyle would be on Putin's payroll at all. Not at all. Yet Christopher Jan Bjerknes is making that charge. And then I'm getting hit by Nick Sparrow from the other side, from the network over at Renegade, saying that, you know, you're so much of a Putin guy, it makes you puke or something to that effect. And then bringing up some other character by the name that got very big play last week. It was a nice week last week in the alternative media. You had a guy by the name of Brendan O'Connell, and it's gotten very well numbers again. And this was broadcast by Nick Sparrow. I'm going to give you a plug today, Nick, and I generally don't do that. But here's this Brendan O'Connell guy. And he kind of sounds, I'm not sure what to make of the guy. He made a lot of, but I was like challenged to bring him on the air here because, quote unquote, this guy won't put up with my, quote unquote, obfuscations. And I'm like, you know, I just got off with Christopher Jan Bjerknes. I'm not in the mood right now, quite frankly, and it's been kind of like simmering all week. I'm not in the mood to like be challenged on my own show. But if you want to get Brendan on, Brendan, come on. I really don't care, dude. But you want to talk about obfuscations, you're not going to have a good time here. Trust me on that, because I get about as much, how do I word this? You know, I've been doing this for 6 years, okay, folks? 6 long years now. I'm not new in this business. I've been doing this a long time. I'm not the dedicated quote-unquote researcher that I used to be, simply because of the time it takes, and I have got another life, but I still give this radio effort a very good effort when we come on the air. But like to claim obfuscations, you know, I was reading some stuff that Brendan put out there, and he talked about how they did, you know, well, he was in Iran, and the Iranians started foaming at the mouth because the BBC called the Persian Gulf the Arabian Gulf. Well, you know what? I can confirm that because I go to Saudi all the time, and they will fume quite a bit, quite frankly, if you call the Persian Gulf the Persian Gulf if you're in if you are in Saudi Arabia. So believe it or not, there really is, quite honestly, there really is this political fight going on between Saudi Arabia and Iran as to what the Persian Gulf should be called. Now, to those of us who are Americans, we call it the Persian Gulf. But because of the political sensitivities, I also have to know to call it the Arabian Gulf. Because I know between the different audiences out there that you might see it as different things. But trust me, growing up as a kid in America, the Persian Gulf was the Persian Gulf was the Persian Gulf. That's what we called it. But there is this difference. So I can confirm what Brendan says about this thing. Then he went on to talk about how there's all these big players out there that, you know, like Christopher Bolin, Reverend Ted Pike, Michael Hoffman, revisionist authors, Israel Shehak, Paul Eisen, Gilad Atzmon. Well, why should the Iranians, quite frankly, care about any of these people? Honestly. How many of you have gone out there and read Gilad Atzmon, really? I've had him on the show. He was my first interview. No, I'm not going to put a clip up of him. But he was my very first interview. But do I know anything really about the guy? Not really. Not really. I know he kind of supports our views. He seems to have the right way that we are approaching it. But do I know even Israel Shehik? Only by name. I know nothing about this guy. Reverend Ted Pike, same thing. I've heard the name, but I know nothing about the guy. Michael Hoffman, same thing. See, a lot of us do our own thing. A lot of, but geez, that's a surprise, right? A lot of us do our own thing. And one of the reasons why I believe Inside the Eye Live and the information I put out is so unique, and it really comes from my, believe it or not, my guitar teacher. When I was in my early 20s, well, growing up as a kid, going back, we were taught that music was for sissies, music was for girls. You know, we didn't deal with music. So as I got into my early 20s, 20, 21, moved out of the house, I wanted to pick up the guitar. I wanted to learn how to play. I was just inspired by Jethro Tull. I thought Jethro Tull was the greatest. And I loved the guy's guitar, by the way. And it was unique. A lot of time change. Yeah, never mind. It's not a music review show. So I took this time out, and I'm trying to see who's pinging me here. Don't see what the message is. It's okay. AJ has just chimed in, guys. So we're looking forward to having AJ on the show in the third hour. That's Andrew Joyce from the OccidentalObserver.net. So very cool. He's just checked in. But I was learning how to play the guitar. And I was a big Jethro Tull fan. And the guy that I played from was one of the biggest studio musicians in Los Angeles, which means as a studio musician, you would be the guy that would be hired to do the commercial for, let's say, a Bud Light commercial. You would be the guy that would be hired to do basically various commercials. Maybe you would be the guy that would be hired to do a piece for a movie if it required a guitar. You would be the guy that would fill in perhaps for a bigger name that would need a guitar segment. So you would be brought in for the session. That's what Tommy did. Tommy was my guitar. And I loved the guy. He was a great guy. Taught me in a way that I was able to just advance beyond my wildest imaginations to where I actually got pretty good within about 5 to 7 years. It takes time to practice, of course. But I asked him once, how do you like Jethro Tull? And he said, you know, Fetch, or Dennis back then, said, Dennis, I do my own thing. I really don't pay attention to everybody else. I never forgot that. So when I got into starting to do my Isisian codes, and the radio business here, the radio opportunity here, and also back with Oracle Broadcasting, my own podcast. I never forgot that. I do my own thing. What does that mean? I don't take a whole lot of influence from anybody out there. And it's not an insult or anything. It's just that I want my work to be as original and as unique as possible. And, of course, you, the audience, I know you've responded to that. You've appreciated that. So if you're going to sit there on a show and you're going to talk about how Iran is Jewish and Masonic, crypto-Jews and crypto-Masons running the country, and they're not even Muslims, yet you're in the same breath, you're going to tell the audience out there that they're very progressive and they know nothing about Orthodox Judaism. They know nothing about the Talmud. They know nothing about Kabbalah. Yet you're going to tell us they're Freemasons and they're Jews. Well, the disconnect starts to fall apart. You know, the disconnect starts to rapidly expand upon the reality here. I don't know how to word that. But, you know, and that's what I'm hearing from this guy by the name of Brendan O'Connell. And he, from what I understand, Brendan O'Connell, and I don't really know the guy's story, I'd still put him on if he's going to stay to the editorial frame that he seems to be very good at. And, you know, he's being targeted because of free speech laws and things like that that they're doing. He kind of sounds like the Arthur Topham. And I mean, I don't know his whole story here. He sounds like the Arthur Topham of Australia, you know. And then you've got Alison Chablot up in England that's also like playing the Arthur Topham role, where they seem to be wanting to use precedents out there to silence the ability to criticize Israel, the ability to criticize Jewish people, et cetera. And we've even seen that lately in the United States Congress, where they advanced a law, I think Law 704 or something like that, that says any criticism of Israel or supporting boycott, divest, and sanction of Israeli products from the occupied territories would become a felony. See, these issues, of course, we just kind of pay attention to. We notice these things, and it's not Peruvians that are then encroaching on our freedoms. It's not the Chinese. It's not Putin. Although Putin, again, I've got some problems with him too, which we might get into a little bit after the break here. But guys, welcome to the early rant here. I've got a whole lot of stuff. Not really. I have nothing. I'm just going to get through the show. I promise I'll get through the show. But, you know, I just find it highly specious to just go out there, guys, and say Trump is compromised. Putin runs the world. Look, we can say Jews run Hollywood because we pretty much get it. We can see through anecdotal evidence that Israel runs our U.S. Congress when I see resolutions for or against the state of Israel. It's either going to be up or down 99-1 in favor of Israel. We can see these things. We can see the media agenda all the time. But to just simply say that people are like, with all the rhetoric, and of course I'm talking about the rhetoric behind it. I just like to just put that idea out there. Be careful, because there's a lot of complexities going on out there. Everybody wants to think that politics is going to turn on a dime just because one person got elected. Well, that's not going to happen. And others want to say that just because someone got elected and they don't do what they're expecting in the snap of a finger, well, that person is co-opted. Well, guys, that's not politics. Be a little pragmatic. Understand where we have come rhetorically from 6 years ago till today. There's a huge difference. Patience, keep working, but patience. It's the Fed. Inside the Eye Live, intelligent figure for the political world. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Joining us from Canada, Vera. Hi, Vera. Got to make it quick, but hello, welcome.
Okay, just a couple of things. They've redirected me now to Kelowna on, you know, the globe. So now when you look at the globe, you don't even know where people are coming from. So I don't know. They're being idiots with me. They redirected me now for the past...
Kelowna is you, huh? So every now and then when I see a lot of Kelowna, that's you.
That's me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Anyways. We're still getting a lot of hot weather out here, and we haven't had rain now for almost a month. We had a storm. Wind was, like, just horrific, and it even blew over some of my sunflowers in my garden. And so I'm scrambling out there, and I'm thinking, well, at least if we get rain. Well, it just spit rain. So it was like, you know, 50 drops of rain. But we got the wind, but no rain, you know. So they really are messing with the weather. Like I told you, my brother listened to the Weather Network in, it was either March or April when we were having flooding, that they said that there's going to be fires all over in BC because they're modifying the weather. There's no two ways about it.
We should presume that. So.
Yeah. Well. So what asshole do I have to call to tell him I want rain?
that's a good question.
Really? Can I call the RCMP and ask them? You know?
Yeah, this is obviously a major problem that we've got to deal with. Right now we just have to gain control of our governments, and then we can try to then go after the secret side of things.
I know. You know, and this Putin thing, I'll tell you, I listened to... I just, last week, because of all that shit from that other idiot that you had on there, I listened to his Putin for the New World Order. And it was a 2014 meeting that he had. And it was like open media, had all different governments and people in there. And this man, of any politician, is the only sane man that talks straight, tells things as they are, you know.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Really? I mean, his rhetoric, the whole thing is that they want they want everybody, meaning they, these spokespeople, these people pushing their books, peddling their products or whatever, they want us to pretend like we don't pay attention to the actual rhetoric and actions going on. Like, we don't know anything. Yeah. Like, we're all, and then if we don't buy into their story, we're all working for Putin. And, dude, give us, you know, you got to take your stuff and just shove that someplace else. And then if you're going to just try to hang up on my face because you're just too awesome for us, well, tough luck.
That was priceless. And then the fact that you told me he was Jewish.
It did make for a great aftermarket a week last week in the controversy for publicity. We had great, you know, I mean, give Jews credit. Whenever they go off their rockers, they give us free publicity. So we need to probably put more Jews on the show.
No kidding. And so, you know, because of this all this heat and everything, now I have to water manually. Instead of using the hose, I've got two huge gardens. I have 8-liter buckets, okay, that I fill up with water, go through the row, pour it down, then I have to go back, fill it up, pour it down. I'll tell you, my shoulders and my arms, I am built, man.
I was going to say, don't be complaining because you're getting some manual exercise out there. I don't want to
hear. I know. Now, if I could only work on my fat stomach.
That's the hardest fat to get rid of.
I know.
That's the hardest.
I say it's my baby fat, you know?
Yeah.
Want the goat report?
No, I need to move on, man.
Anyways, I wanted to call in and just touch base. And maybe the idiots will redirect me back to Salmon Arm.
Issues. Sometimes if I'm in
care,
Saudi,
fat,
I'm in
the listen to the show.
All of it, so it happens. Okay, thanks, Vera. Guys, this is listener sponsored and supported radio, and of course, let's rely upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. And that means it's your donations help. And so far, you know, we put up some donations and what do we call it? Sponsorship and donations page. And there's not been a single donation made inside the iLive yet on that page. I can't say I'm disappointed because I'm not going to get disappointed over something I happily do for free anyways. But guys, you know, it'd be nice. Hey, send me a few shekels, as they like to say in the business here. But nonetheless, it is listener sponsored and supported radio. We are putting together now, I don't know if I should even announce this, but I'm going to do it anyways. We're putting together, not we, but the network, the station here is putting together a live television. We're going to work with Nighthawk, the owner of the network here, to help get that debugged. He's already got a lot of it debugged, but I'm going to probably put together something for the network and for just to test this out. I've already got the software he needs to do the cross-connect or the interlink. That's been paid for, quite frankly, from donations from guys and gals like you out there. So we do invest. Believe it or not, we do invest the money back into the product. And so part of that investment, we're putting together, not we again, but the station, Nighthawk, is putting together a streaming video platform so we can actually start to go live on TV. Again, my issue is not TV, but streaming television, I guess we could say, digital television. So we're working on these, and all that takes money, again. So we appreciate all your support. Again, every time you go out there and say, who am I going to support this year? Keep freedomslips.com and Revolution Radio in mind. And, of course, yours truly, The Fetch, at Inside the Eye Live. You can go to Inside the Eye Live, go to the donations and support page, and you can support the efforts here. I told Nighthawk this today, in fact, we were talking about the television, the streaming platform, and I said, you know, really, I've got the software. I've got everything we need to do to run very high-quality video. It just, I need a particular style of laptop because I'm not located. In other words, I have to take the laptop wherever I go. I can't have a solid workstation. I need something that I can take from here to Saudi, to Riyadh, to Jeddah, to wherever I am. I want to be able to carry the platform with me and have high quality and use this particular software. So there's it's a unique window of requirements that I have. And yeah, perhaps I'm missing out, but perhaps I'm not. Be patient. We're putting that together. But I have to buy a new laptop. It's not going to be cheap. I think it's going to be like $800 when I get to Riyadh. If I try to buy it here in Jordan, it's about $1,200. So it's very expensive here in Jordan. So I'm going to wait till I get back to Riyadh and... But they're saying here, so I see, by the way, I had trouble getting to the Tango page via your new website, Fetch. I'm not sure. It does take a little bit longer to load that Tango, but I have not had a problem with my side. So, again, if you have problems, email me, let me know. We always try to fix technical issues on the website. But from all indications, you guys like the new web design, by the way. When I look at the stats, numbers are up 100% in traffic. So it's like you guys do like the new website. So I need to keep filling it with some good content for you. But as far as the new look and feel, the numbers are way up, literally 100%. So that is definitely appreciated out there. It's time for the ITEL Cat Report. The ITEL Cat Report is proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. It's inconveniently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk, and by Blackbird's Breakfast, Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club. It's a radio show hosted by Blackbird Nine, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn. He's an NSA whistleblower, 9/11 truth advocate, former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. And you can hear Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Spreaker. Cat Report this week is, again, a fight inside of the House. What happened last week was after the show, actually that night, like 4 in the morning, it's very hot here. And it's reasonably safe. So we have like an iron gated door that's very open. So it lets the air in. We keep the house very open. And so what happens, though, is the smaller cats can pop up through this thing. If they're having the mindset to do so, they can pop through. The bigger cats, no, not really. But the small cats, yes. And so, I don't know, like 3:30, 4 in the morning, I heard a huge cat fight in the front room. And I'm thinking, come on, Bruiser and One Eye, just kind of chill, man. I don't want to hear this right now. And the two girls that, you know, the girls that live with me here, they got up and they're like, you know, trying to break up the fight. Well, what happened was a small white kitten had come into the house last week. And One Eye decided, no, you're not coming into my house, man. And so there was a huge fight. One Eye had the poor kitten cornered, and Emily being Emily, she just charged in, picked up the small kitten and nursed it back outside while the other two cats inside here were huffing and puffing and snorting around the house looking for any other signs of any other cats. So it was quite a wild week in that regard. Last night I had the door open, and the cat we've been talking a lot about, Car-Car, he decided to come into the house last night. I'm like, Car-Car. He came in only like, literally only about like, I don't know, 3 feet. I said, Car-Car. I'm looking at him. He knows his name. I said, Car-Car, you can't come in my house. And he's looking at me. He's literally looking at me. He's like, looking at me. I said, Car-Car, you can't come in the house, dude. Please. You know, if One Eye smells you, you're in trouble. If Bruiser smells you, you're in trouble. So I don't need to fight, Car-Car. Please, can you kind of like just leave? Because you can't come in my house. And he looked at me, puts his head down, and he kind of just turns around and walks away. I thought, oh, that was easy. I didn't even have to chase him out. So as a reward, we gave him a couple pieces of chicken from the party we had. You know, we had a party yesterday out at, this picnic slash area in an area called Marj al Hammam, Al-Baha, and where they have like a small stream running out of the mountains. They pull some of the fresh water for water tankers. The tankers come in and pull the water right out of the mountain, serve that to the people out there. And we were there, and it was a birthday party for one of our party here. So we had a big party, and the place we wanted to go was full. The other place we wanted to go just had way too many kids. It was like, no way, I'm not going to spend all day here. So we ended up going to another place just down the mountain a little bit, down the hill. And it was, I couldn't believe it. the people were absolutely polite, kind, courteous. The swimming pool area, the pool was not the cleanest in the world, but it certainly wasn't filthy. And it was warm, you know, but cool and nice to swim in. We ended up having a great day yesterday. We met some people that were Palestinian living in Sweden. I'm sure that makes you Swedes feel great. But a Palestinian woman living in Sweden, she was very polite and courteous. She was here visiting her brother. We met another Iraqi couple with family from London. So it seems like all the Arabic people that have been exposed to the West and are actually pretty good people still, they were coming in and into this place. So we were surrounded by not so many locals. I mean, there was a lot of locals there, but it was quite a nice gathering. It was a birthday party when we sang Happy Birthday. Somebody actually brought over a radio, not a radio, but some type of recorded, like tape recorder or something. It had Happy Birthday encoded on it, so she played Happy Birthday. This was somebody, we don't know, from some other part of the picnic area. She came over, played the Happy Birthday song. Literally, not a lot, but a fair amount of the people gathered around in this picnic area were singing Happy Birthday to my guest, which was very nice. We had a nice big cake. I ended up giving away probably 80% of it, because as you can imagine, it's a picnic with families. So we went ahead and we cut up the cake and we donated quite a lot of the cake to all the different tables, because, you know, when you give some to one table, the children are looking at you with these big wide eyes, and we thought it ain't cool. So I said, please, all the tables with children, you give cake to, take cake to all these tables that are seeing what's going on. I don't want any of the children to feel left out. So what I did, literally, I had them cut up actually an expensive cake, man. This was like a $42 cake. And I had them cut it up and literally give it to all the tables with children, because, hey, that's just how the fetch is. So I was left with just a tiny bit of cake for myself after spending $45 for this cake, you know. But I don't care. It's good publicity. It's good goodwill. It shows that we from the West are very polite and courteous and, of course, gentlemen. And that's the way we lead by example in the West, quite frankly. And I believe we should always be doing that. Always be doing that where the opportunity avails itself. We are leaders of this planet. We are not followers. And if we want a better planet, honestly, we must lead by example. We absolutely must lead. And so anytime you have the chance to do goodwill, it kind of comes out of that Christian world, quite frankly. You do goodwill. And that's just the way it is. And I believe in that firmly. And that's how I am. So welcome to Inside the Eye Live and the Fetch as he goes out on a picnic. Let's see here. We have something coming up now. It's called the Oive Moment. Oh, you know, I got to remember to plug this in. I'm going to do this one again. You know what it is I've got like a two ways to do audio from here, and one of them I have to unplug because there's a hum in my head. So if I don't unplug it, but that's where all this music comes from. So hold on a second.
Oy vey. Oy gewalt. It's like another show.
Oy vey.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, everybody.
Hollywood is run by Jews. It's owned by Jews. Very goddamn angry at some of the Jews.
I thrive on Boyum Tears.
Oy vey!
Oy vey, everybody!
It's time for Inside the Eye Lies. Oy vey, Mormon, brought to you by Grism.blogspot.com. Grism.blogspot.com, affectionately known as Mammy's Shit, is one of the longest running aggregation sites featuring many of your favorite podcasters in the alternative media. Visit grism.blogspot.com, where all shows are edited and corrected specifically for your listening enjoyment. And this week's Oy Vey moment is a little bit of a... how do we say this? It's kind of a macro form here. And that is Donald Trump. Here, you've got two different issues going on. In Canada, Canada is now welcoming transgenders into their military. But this week, Donald Trump announced that transgenders would be forthwith kicked out and not allowed to serve in the U.S. military. And, of course, we saw quite a lot of kvetching and whining and complaining about that from various sources out there. I forget the guy's name, something Takei. Some Japanese guy, I used to know his name, but he's out there saying, oh, you know, we're on the wrong side of this, and we got to give transgenders the right to serve in the military. You've got people like, I don't even remember all the names, quite frankly. I should have wrote it all down while I was reading it this week. But, you know, they're saying, like, all transgenders should be given, like, surgery to change their gender. And, you know, each surgery is like $100,000 each. Multiply that by, let's say, the potential risk of 150,000 transgenders if we just started to flood the market, meaning our military with transgenders. And we had that former SEAL Team 6 member come out that's now a tranny. And a lot of this is just the gender-driven Jewish garbage. Really, it's Jewish garbage. And we need to focus on that, reinforce it, and let people know that we as a collective society have tired of Jews and their cultural agenda being rammed down our faces. So to all of those leftist liberals and Jewish nutcases out there, who were supporting transgenders in the military and trying to paint this as an issue that it's good for national security, we have two words for you. Number one, Canada. And number two is, screw you, oy vey, buddy. We don't care anymore. That's more than two words. But guys, it's about time we put this insane Jewish agenda back where it goes, and that is back into the you-know-whats of the people that are giving it to us. We've been hearing this for really quite some time, and it's been going on for years and years and years and years, and it's about time that we just simply put an end to the insanity coming out of our Jewish population here in America. You know, somebody was saying in the chat room, and it's very, I don't see it because I'm not in America, but they're saying nowadays you cannot see an advertisement that doesn't have some type of obvious agenda embed into it, whether it's encoding some type of transgender agenda, whether it's encoding the mixed race miscegenation agenda. You can't see it. It's everywhere. And what does that tell us again? It's an organized campaign. And this campaign is bored all the way down into the various media advertising companies, obviously. They're the ones that are buying, they're the ones creating the ads, they're the ones that place the ads. So we have a problem. We understand we have a problem. It's, of course, you can go look at Putin, waste your time with Putin. I don't care. Go ahead, knock yourself out. You know, you're welcome. And there's platforms and forums for you where you can go talk Putin all day. Look, if you want to tell us that Jews are dominant everywhere within politics, well, you're not telling us anything we don't know. You're not being a crack researcher here. We already know that. What we're looking for is a change in rhetoric. We are looking for a change in tone. We are looking for movement in the process that allows for things to change. Now, if we don't have a war, quite frankly, if we do not have a war on our Jewish press, we are not going to make the necessary mass escape. Perfect. Inside the Eye Live, back with more in hour number two. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live. Intelligent media for the clinically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Now in our seventh year, everybody. That's right. We are just starting our seventh year here of radio broadcasting. This is an anniversary date for everybody here at Inside the Eye Live. Anyways, we've been doing this really now for starting our seventh year. That's right, our seventh year. So I've got some interesting stuff here going back to the past just to kind of give you an idea. You know, back when we started Inside the Eye Live, there was something called the alternative media in the way of Alex Jones. And Alex Jones was like the big guy out there, without a doubt. He was the big guy. And Now, hopefully I've got this cued right. But back then, there was like loose change. There was something called Info Warriors. It was a website that I had that had Jason Burmes, who is a Jewish kid, and Mark Dice. Mark Dice has gone on to become somewhat of a superstar. Let's call him for what he is and give him some credit here. Mark Dice has gone on to be somewhat of a superstar in the alternative media use of YouTube. He's really good at it, and I sometimes watch his videos, and sometimes I actually enjoy his videos too. He does a pretty good job. Give him credit. The other guy was Jason Burmes, and they put together this video with Jason anyways, put this video called Loose Change, and it was doubtful done by him. This guy was a sniveling little teenage, nothing personal, everybody, please, but this guy was a sniveling little teenage Jewish punk, and here he is being given all of this platform to tell us about 9/11, and if we didn't buy into all of his crap, well, you know, we were the bad guys. We were the anti-Semites. And just to give you of the arrogance, this is over 6 years ago. This was before I came on air. Jason Burmes once on a show with Alex Jones, and I believe this is cued right. I hope so. But listen to this. This was the environment we were working in. It was actually fairly prevalent, quite frankly, 6 years ago.
Let's go to Desert Larry in California. Desert Larry, final caller. What's up, buddy?
Well, sir, I just wanted to say that love, peace, and joy of the Great Spirit is all that matters on this planet Earth. And that, my younger brother called in earlier and asked about Joseph Mengele, but it's in paperclip, but yet the Jewish people, they seem to run 90% of all the media and all of the Hollywood movies.
All right, thanks for the call. Everybody hates the Jews. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me, man? Are you kidding me? I mean, seriously, are you going to ruin a good show? All right, I got 5 minutes to take on the Nazis or the people that just don't like Jews for some reason. Look, man. It's not a Jewish conspiracy, okay? Get over it. I'm sorry.
Now, that was Burmes going back before I even came on the air. This was like 4 or 6 months before I came on the air. And this was the typical, we call it the scoffing, mocking Jew. This attitude, they create all this scoffing mockery in the political discussion, poison the well. First of all, when you listen to that caller back then, he just talked about how 90% of the media is owned by Jewish people. Well, that's a factual statement. There's nothing hating about that. And if you notice the way the direction that the rhetoric always goes when you confront Jewish people directly, and I'm talking about those that are focused on preserving the status quo and their Jewish privilege, they want to immediately talk about how everybody hates the Jews. Well, I didn't hear that caller talk about hate. I didn't hear that caller talk about anything against Jewish people per se. Just say, hey, they control 80% of my media. Now that's a problem. But then you have this jackass. We called him Burmes because his name is Burmes, but we called him Burmes back then. And Burmes, he wants to talk about how there's absolutely no conspiracies going on here. None of you know, these conspiracies, no, there's nothing like that. But that's actually just not the case. There are conspiracies going on. And a lot of people just can't seem to grasp their head around that something actually like a conspiracy might actually be transpiring here. And let's see if I have this. Let's see where if I put that clip. I tried to organize all this before I came on the air. Is it this one? Let's try this one here. I think this is the clip that just kind of shares with you the idea of a conspiracy. And this was talked about all the way back, I believe. No, this would not be the one. This would not be the one. I'll tell you, I should be more organized when I do these types of things. But I have some clips here. Really, I have some clips here from the past here. Media dominance. I think I just have the date wrong on this one. Let me try this one here.
Noahide.com/finalwar.htm. This website is put out by the Hasidic Jews and Hasidic Gentiles united to save America. These people were very big. They're big followers of the Rebbe Lubavitcher. They're very big in the settler movement. The settler movement is then going to be linked to people like Murdoch. Last week we covered Murdoch. But Murdoch is basically part of this Jewish ultranationalist crowd that's linked with people like the JAHG or Jews and Hasidic Gentiles. And from their website directly, they say, directly, Judaism has always been a conquering religion, not for the purpose of converting Gentiles to become Jews, but rather with the mission of returning the world to the universal covenant between GD and Noah. Well, now that's where you get it, this Noahide comment, this Noahide. But they're saying, you know, they want to tell you that it's the Muslims who are here to conquer. It's the Muslims who are here to take over. But in reality, it's not. It's these ultra-nationalist organizations that are tax deductible, that you can donate hundreds of millions of dollars to. And guess what? Through these tax deductible organizations, everybody who does not support this idea, guess what? You pay for it because you're going to subsidize the people that did pay for it. Does this make sense to you?
See,
literally, you're subsidizing your own government takeover because it's internal. They're talking about how they must create this new Noahide society. They're talking about how they literally must take over the government through quote unquote, in the second stage, the growing Noahide movement will seize political power using only peaceful, lawful means in the capitals of the Western nations. This, of course, will not take place until the Noahide society has grown to some threshold size. Well, guess what? It's already grown to that threshold size. It's already there. So you're talking about a group that openly is saying we must take over all of the Western civilization capitals of the world. And they've accomplished this already. This is why a Lieberman, who, to me, he's a clueless idiot on the global scene, can get before a body of Congress and he can tell you and Congress, hey, we have to cut Social Security entitlements. He uses the word entitlements, so we can go fight all these wars on behalf of who? Our Jewish ultranationalists.
Now, imagine, guys, that was the Fetch talking on his very, very, very first show, going all the way back to, actually, that was my second show, the first recorded show, August 6, 2011. Now, here we're talking about this Hasidic Jews and Americans or something like that, some group that talks about the Noahide laws, and we did a whole show about this type of information. And how they're talking about literally how we in the Noahide movement must come and capture, take over all, that's right, all of the Western democracies' capitals. We must come to rule the West. That was the information you were getting from the Fetch literally back in August of 2011. Yet you could tune in. That's right. You could tune in to InfoWars, and you could tune in and listen to Jason Burmess, who was then being featured by Alex Jones, and you're going to get a five-minute tirade about how, oh, everybody hates the Jews, everybody hates this, and it's not like there's a grand conspiracy. Look, Mr. Burmess, you little punky little kid, and he's disappeared, by the way. He's not here today. Where's Burmass? Where is this Burmass? I don't remember. Where did he go? Burmass, I'm still standing, buddy, with all of you flakes out there. Because Burmass was the type of guy that would go out there, and he was typical of the Jewish community. And what was going on back then, some 12 years ago, is the internet's new. They're starting to create this. And they were bringing up all of this quote-unquote talent from left and right. One of those was Burmass. One was Weave Arnheimer. One was a kid by the name of Bob Tuscan. He was like trying to be promoted as some big guru guy out there. It was everywhere, you know. But a lot of these guys don't exist. Mark Dicey exists. But a lot of these guys disappeared. Why? Because their method, their whole style was to do nothing but what? Poison the well to keep you, That's right, to keep you from being able to actually witness and see precisely what was going on out there. You know, guys, we were doing this, honestly, 2011. Literally 2011. Here's another clip from the very first recorded show on Inside the Eye Live, 8-6-2011.
There's this idea called Moshiach. You know, what the Israelis slash the Zionist Christians want to bring about is this new world order based on their idea of what the world should be. They're talking about taking over the United States government by basically Jewish organizations.
See, now that was something we were talking about in 2011. This was like revolutionary. It was unheard of back then. It was something nobody talked about because everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people were afraid that if you went out there and you talked about these issues in 2011 and talked about your own replacement and you're basically funding your own demise, well, these are all now today mainstream media talking points. The attacks on Western slash Jewish media is on, it's a full court press right now. This is step one. We must shatter the Jewish media. We must destroy Jewish advertising. It must happen. Remember, we are always told that you are not allowed to boycott anything Jewish, yet somehow we are supposed to tolerate these guys. Well, that call didn't make it through here. And let me see. I'm going to bring in an old friend of mine now. And let's see if he can get this call. Michael Goodrich, author of Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947. It's ringing, but I don't see him calling. I think that was him trying to call in. Michael, good morning. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Hi, Fetch. My pleasure being here with you.
I heard you were out like the Fetch last night, partaking and imbibing just a shwaya, which is a little in Arabic. So how was your party last night?
Yes and no, because it was via a telephone talking with someone, and they were imbibing, and I thought, man, I'm just a drag tonight, so I decided to do a little bit myself, and so we're basically just struggling with this day. But
no problem. Michael, hold on. You're the guest here, but we always give our callers because it's your customers too, our audience here. Okay. 704 Eric Coyd. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Oh, hey Dennis. I'm sorry. I didn't know you had a.
Don't worry. It was just a. Don't worry, you're welcome. Get your point in. Let's keep the show moving. How are you?
Yeah. I was listening. I thought you'd been around longer than that. 2011. I thought I'd been listening to you for longer than that. But anyway, you put out a ton of good information. But, you know, there's another incongruency as long as you're mentioning the InfoWars crew over there and Jason Burmis. I heard that call. I remember that call, by the way, when that guy called in. There was another guy that called in and said something similar, and Jason Burmis said, you need to put a gun to your 357 Magnum to your head and pull a trigger.
Yeah, so basically here's a major alternative media source, and you've got a host out there saying you should throw a toaster in the bathtub and party with yourself and electrocute yourself. And then he turns around. So this violence, you know, Frank, this violence being called against people that are opposed to Jewish agendas. We've been witnessing this for years and years, and now it's just starting to make it into the public eye once they see it happening against the Trump and their supporters. But we've been seeing this for years and years, right, Frank?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even the local talk show host of WBT Radio around here, I mean, I if I send them some information in a rational, adult, mature way, they'll send me back an email, you need to put a gun to your head and pull the trigger. I mean, they want me dead. But if I say anything back, they say, well, we've reported you to security. And I don't make any threats. I'm not stupid.
Yeah, for what? For
but
what?
We take that as a threat. But it's not a threat when they do it.
Exactly. Yeah, they can literally call it out straight, open, even on air. But, you know, I hear you, Frank, man. But that's what I'm just saying about this show. We're trying to say how it was like for us when we just got started. It was like this, you know. You had to walk on eggshells just to get your word out.
It has changed. One more thing real quick. You can find that clip. I went at it with Alex Jones for about 10 minutes. I don't know when it was. It's been 3 or 4 years ago, maybe. And I got him to admit, and there's a 10-second clip of it. You can find it. Alex Jones says, Jewish mafia is at the heart of the New World Order, unquote. That was the end of the call. And he basically thrown his hands up because I wouldn't take no for an answer. He kept trying to think he could convince me that it wasn't the Jews. And then he makes that statement. Well, how can, on the one hand, Firmus and all these people over at InfoWars has nothing to do with Jews, but yet Alex Jones admitted he wants to call it the Jewish mafia, is at the heart of the New World Order. You can't have it both ways. But that's the one group that he doesn't ever talk about 364 days a year, unless somebody called and backed him into a corner like that. Also, I'm getting the word that Alex Jones and the InfoWars crew there has not covered not one word about this anti-boycott and divestment bill against Israel. I mean, not one word about it. If it was any other group, if it was any other country, Ireland, Italy, even Saudi Arabia, he'd be all over it. It would be the top lead story every day. Not one word, not one mention of it.
That is interesting.
That's proof. That is proof right there that he is a shill.
Trying to hide the... Yeah, okay, very good. Anything else, thanks. Frank? We got more calls online. Thanks. That's Frank, everybody in North Carolina. 705 area code, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Hey, Fetch, it's Lonnie from Canada. How you doing, man?
Oh, Lon, I didn't recognize the number there. Welcome, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. I think you got a guest here waiting, so I'll try to make it quick. I'm sorry I didn't realize.
No, it's okay. Today. This is a fun show. It's my birthday of Inside the Eye Live, folks, so we're having kind of a fun show today at the same time, so no worries.
Hey, digging the new website, by the way. Oh, okay. Somebody wants to say hi to you here really quick. Hold on. Just say hi, Fetch.
Hi, Fetch.
Oh, hello there. How are you?
That's my little guy. He's a big fan of yours, too.
Okay. That is
okay. Anyway, I just, you know, I want to suss out this Jewish activist thing for people, because a lot of people waste a lot of time with this, okay? Basically, as far as I'm concerned, you get a guy, if you get a Jew who calls into your program, either a caller or a guest, obviously, they're, you know, aware of the Jewish problem, or they wouldn't even be on your radar, right? Okay, so the bottom line here is, as far as I'm concerned, the so-called good Jews, and we know that's a gigantic myth, they should be the ones on the tallest soapbox screaming the most, because they would have the most insider understanding, right, of Jewish history, of Jewish mindset, culture, and the Jewish agenda. And so they should be just screaming at the top of their lungs, you know, this crazy group wants all you people dead, and we don't want anything to do with it, so we're here to warn you, right? But that's not what they do. That's not what they do at all. Not one of them.
No, Lon, this is what frustrates me the most also. It's like, guys, you know the problem. I'm being very adult with you. You're being adult with me, but you just want to act as if somehow I'm the bad guy here. You know what's going on, dude, so why are you going after me?
Right, and there's really only one Jew that I could point a finger to who was doing that, and that was Bobby Fischer. He was one of the people saying, "Hey, these people are nuts. They're trying to kill you, and therefore we got to, you know, go after them in the same way." He was about the only one I can think of, and look what they did to him, right? Okay, so let's look at these so-called Jewish activists. You basically got three types. You got your mocking Jew, like that idiot Burmese you were talking about. Sure. Anybody who knows what Fetch is saying here with Burmese knows exactly the point he's making. Some of those kind of characters show up in the scene here and there, although that seems to be minimizing now because it's just not holding water, right? Then your second type of Jew activist is your clowns like this Bierknecht guy. He's been around for a long time, and they speak in a really matter-of-fact manner. Doesn't matter that there's no evidence to back up what they're saying, but they speak so matter-of-factly that it almost makes them sound legitimate. And then you got your third type, which is like Gilad Otzman. I don't buy this guy whatsoever, because he's what I call this sort of likable Jew. You know, you listen to him speak, he's kind of on board, he seems like a likable enough guy. Oh yeah, and by the way, buy my jazz record, whatever. But the thing is I look at guys like that, and so they're aware, right? That's why they're there. What's their solution? So here's a guy who I was in the IDF, blah, blah, blah. I'm well aware that IDF snipers shoot Palestinian children in the face for no reason, and blah, blah, blah. We know the big Jewish agenda, but his solution is what? When you cut through all of Gilad Osman's rhetoric and nonsense, his solution is, well, yeah, they need to behave a little bit better. Really, that's what it comes down to. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Osman, but you're a shill. You're trying to make people believe that there are some good ones out there. If you are an insider, were in quotations, an insider, and you know the whole agenda, you know that the Jews need to behave a little better is a complete bunch of nonsense. He should be on a tall soapbox going, you guys better run yourself and go after these people when it comes right down to it. So there's not a good one, not one. And people need to stop wasting any time on these kind of characters. So I think what you did with Bjerknes, although not planned, I'm sure, was fantastic because, I mean, the guy just outed himself, right?
Well, you know, the way he was talking, everything, like you said, he was the matter-of-fact type of guy. But half of 70% of what he said didn't make any sense relative to me. But he's mainly like, it's a matter of fact. Then he wants to tell us that the Nick Berg story is 100% legit and Zarqawi was the guy who did it. And, of course, we're joking here that Zarqawi was retarded. And he's going to tell us that, well, where's your proof? I say, come on, dude, you just spent a half hour on my show with all kinds of crap and nonsense, and you're going to go there with that with me? And that's, of course, when he popped off the line. But, yeah, I don't have any patience for any of this anymore. Just like you, I've kind of grown tired of it.
Neither do I. My patience is completely gone with anything to do with Jews, of course, but also the ignorance of the people. I just returned from Russia a few days ago. And I got to tell you, Fetch, anybody who believes this Russian hacking nonsense and whatnot, it's just their brains aren't working.
Is Russia like this terrible place to live and Putin's a thug and it's a terrible, you know, everybody's afraid to live?
Absolutely not. I'll give you my... I wasn't there a really long time, but enough to get a general feel, you know? First of all, the people in general from, we'll say, 50 to 60 years old and up, especially the males, are very cold, almost not very nice. And the reason for that, I think, is they come from an era that wasn't very nice, and it had an imprint
on
them.
They come from the Jewish era. Let's be honest. They come from... The Jewish era.
That's right. The people from we'll say, you know, 50-ish down, the men are a little more guarded, but the women are generally just very warm, very nice people. But for the most part, there's a very big difference. There's sort of a cutoff there. And you can see that, you know, the reason why. He just stated it, the Jewish era, the non-Jewish era. And it's a very modern, advanced first world nation. It's generally very clean, as most white nations tend to be, places like Estonia, for example. The one thing that I find really interesting, of course, I've never been to Russia during the hardcore communist Jewish era, so I can't do a direct comparison personally, but from talking to people who were there at that time and reading and so on and so on, it's very clear to me that whatever Putin's doing there is improving the standard of living of the Russian people. And I'm sorry, but I go to the U.S. all the time, and I cannot make that claim for the United States. And here's one really interesting thing is crossing the border into Russia. Now, like you talk all the time about where you live and your job, going to different countries, you have to have the appropriate visas and don't mess around and get it done. Well, it's like that in Russia, of course.
Yes,
you have
true.
To have the appropriate visas to work there, which I was there, and I did, so I had no issues whatsoever. So I go to the border; it's very Soviet-looking, you know, the signage, the architecture, and whatnot. Yeah, I'm in line. I go up, and of course, the border control Soviet guys have that classic Soviet scowl, you know, whatever that means. They do have that look, and the man looks at me very clearly. He looks at my passport clearly. He scans it, looks at the computer. He stamps it, and he says, have a nice day. Well, I can tell you for a lot of experience that that's not the way it goes when I cross the U.S. border.
Yeah,
I get
exactly.
harassed a lot crossing the U.S. border.
And it's even American flights. Well, it happens to us Americans too, Lon. Lon, thanks for the call. We're going to get back to Michael Goodrich after the break here. And appreciate it.
Look forward to it.
Thanks.
Take care, Fetch.
Say hello to the little guy. All right, Mike, hang tight. It's the Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically elite. All right, everybody, welcome. It's the Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. We got like a full schedule now, everything backing up, so we're going to skip the bumper music. Vera, welcome back. Make it quick, please.
Okay, well, one thing I wanted to say, if you ever come out to BC, come and visit. Okay, we got lots of room here on the property for you to come and visit.
Well, you know what? I might just pitch a tent and I'll just live for free. How's that?
Well, we'll let you stay here for a while. Anyways, hey, one thing I wanted to say, you know, this should be required study. Benjamin H. Friedman, a Jewish defector, I don't know if you know who he is, a Jewish defector warns America.
Yeah.
So he said that there was 80 to 90 million Germans. They could have got rid of the Jews. There was only 460,000 Jews in the country at the time, and they were making all the havoc. And so now there's 460,000 Jews. How could they then all of a sudden be 6 million Jews?
Well, you know, that's a side issue. We'll get to that another time.
Really?
Let me get back.
I just thought I'd throw that in.
Thanks so much. No problem. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Vera.
I'll call again. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye, Vera. Michael, welcome back to Inside the Eye Live. Thanks for being so patient and holding so long.
Fetch, it's my pleasure, but it's all my fault, too, because I did something that I promised myself I would never, ever do in my life, and I've done a lot of radio, as you know, actually go on board while I'm still listening to you. And so that explains...
You were actually on Radio 101. You forgot to turn your speakers down?
Isn't that something? Yeah. I mean,
that's something, man.
I do forget things,
you know,
apparently. But
if you were live in front of me right now, I'd just have to go get that ruler yardstick and just say, put your hand out there, dude.
Well, I deserve it, too. I mean, it's true.
It's like, come on. See these fingers there? Turn it down. Remember.
Hey, you know, you've got the coolest... bumper music, bumper words, whatever. You have some music that I just love, but I always really like that thing where people are talking about, you know, they're really serious, they're speeches from movies and things like that. But then it ends with Kurt Russell playing Wyatt Earp in Tombstone and talking about bringing down the thunder. I'm here, you know. Oh man, that's my all-time favorite movie, by the way. And this may be off the subject matter quite a bit, but. It's got the best script, the best acting, the best best everything. And basically, it's just white men killing white men. I mean, they don't have any set aside for
most of Western history, it seems.
Yeah, it's just a fascinating movie. But anyway, hey, I got to say happy anniversary, bud.
Thank you. You're the first person. Well, not the first, but yes, thank you so much. You know,
honestly, 7 years, that's quite a milestone, and you're getting better and better and better. That's the scary part. And there's something else I've been wanting to say to you for a long time, and it seems kind of odd, kind of strange, that for a person you've never met, I consider you one of my best friends.
I sincerely do. You've been a good friend of Inside the Eye Live also. You know, you were very gracious to come on when we were a nobody. You were the big guy out there, and you were gracious enough to come on the show, which was nice. And you've always been one of the most popular guests here, quite frankly. So clearly you've had a big following over the years, and people have appreciated your work. So having someone like you come on Inside the Eye Live just gave Inside the Eye Live quite a lot more credibility. So obviously we have to say thanks to people like you who come on the show, because that's what makes it a show.
And I've got to tell folks, the listeners out there, there's a lot of reasons why Fetch is a great bud of mine and will always remain so, by the way. But I want to mention the most recent reason. You're a great friend of mine. I'm in the middle of my next book, maybe my last book. At the way we're going right now, it's really taken a lot out of me. But it's another book on World War II, especially Germany and Japan, what they went through. But I'm going through a period in my life, a money crunch time. And when you're writing, you're not making any money, basically. That's setting yourself to pay bills. But But I asked Fetch, I got a hold of Fetch. I said, man, how do you raise funds? How do you go after it? And Fetch gave me some great ideas, some super ideas. And then guess what? That day in my PayPal account, I got $75 from Dennis Fetch. And that's what I mean. Fetch talks the talk, but ladies and gentlemen, he also walks the walk. Now, I've said that, but please don't imagine that Fetch is going to send you $75 just for asking for it. We've known each other quite a while.
This is to help promote and get your book off the ground, because what your work is very important. I think once that book is ready, you should come sit down. We should talk about how to crowdfund the thing. As you guys know, Mike has been working very hard over the years, written a lot of work out there. But, you know, later in life, it's too late to be getting divorced, dude. But, you know, divorces happen. They're targeted sometimes, and things happen, and it puts you in a bad situation economically. So we may have to crowdfund this thing.
Yeah, but I wanted people to know that you're more than just a voice, more than just a commodity. You're more than just a radio personality, and one of the best, by the way, in the business. You're actually a human being. And I got to tell you, Fetch, that just was the world to me when you did that. But anyway, just imagine if we didn't have Fetcho. Dennis Fetcho anymore. Just imagine, or Dr. Destructo after last weekend with the little episode with the guest.
How did you like that episode?
It was shocking because, honestly, let me say straight, you guys are going along on a level that I cannot even get close to, because, like I said, I'm in 1945 right now. I'm totally involved in living in 1945 to write this book, so I'm not keeping up with current events. You guys are saying things that I had never even thought of, much less heard of. And so I'm trying to understand this. These two gentlemen that are very intellectual, very intelligent, very learned, and I was trying to follow it. And then suddenly, man, wham, you said a couple of things, and he's out of there. You know, he's gone, basically. And I thought, I would have stayed with it. I don't know what he got so pissed off about, because that's what debate's all about, isn't it? He must have thought that you were going to just carry him along and basically, nurture him. But
that may have happened.
But it was unbelievable, I thought. But still, as we both know, the guy, now I know, was pretty much doing what they always do, it seems, and you basically just called his bluff, and poor guy, he just had to cut and run. No more of this crap.
Now, you've been doing this a long time, obviously, being around the alternative media. You've been on a lot of shows, radio. You yourself have done radio with your soon-to-be ex, or if not ex-wife. You've done a lot of radio, a lot of programming. What have you found for the listeners out there that are new to Inside the Eye Live? What is it about this show that they should give it a chance and just stick with it and be patient and perhaps take some value from it as they start to listen more and more?
Well, I think the really interesting part of your program is that once I start listening, that's it. I can't stop listening. And I'm not just here to flatter and build you up on this, but you have, let's just say what it is. It's charismatic. You have a charismatic approach, your personality, the obvious things that you have. You're extremely talented and extremely intelligent, know what you're talking about, and are fearless. We'll go wherever you want to go because you're fearless. And that's a charismatic approach to me. I start listening to you, and I learn a jillion things. But people, I'm sure everyone, Vera included, is drawn back to you again and again and again. And you and I have talked about this. We both are busy beavers. We're doing lots of things. Somewhere in there, we would like to learn to live again, how to actually, kick your feet back and lay around all day and just drink lemonade or beer or whatever you want to drink. and enjoy life. That's not going to happen to us, clearly, because you're on a mission, I'm on a mission. And so all I can say as a listener is thank goodness you're on a mission, because you're my shot in the arm every Saturday, and I'm not alone. Your numbers tell a story. I mean, you've got a great following, but what I would personally like to see, but what I'm sure you don't want to do, is really go more, go big time. Go 2 or 3 days a week. Now, I know you've got something coming up starting this Thursday, but that sort of a personality that I could listen to you every night. I'm very serious about that. Now, that means I wouldn't be getting a lot of things done. However, this curiosity I have, this thirst for knowledge, understanding, and above all, the truth, you feed that need. You actually, and folks, I want to tell you something else, too, while I'm on it, and I sincerely mean this. Can you imagine no Dennis Fetch Show on Saturday? Can you really look ahead and say, well, I'll go wash the car while, since Dennis is off the air, I will go shopping and get some things done, whatever. Yeah, but brother, I'm going to tell you what, you're going to be having a big hole in that Saturday. That's the way I am. And so, you know, we were talking a little bit about fundraising. Well, I can say this to the folks. Can you imagine there no Dennis Fetch Show? Well, that's a possibility if the funds aren't there. It truly is. Now, I think that you folks will come through, quite honestly, but Dennis always, just like everybody else, needs to know, needs to have the contributions. And I've already told you a little bit about him and what he means to me, and I'm sure he means that to you folks too. So anytime you got something extra, just pass it on, because it's not going to be put anywhere else better than this, and you'll get it back in return. Trust me.
You know, I appreciate that. I'm not one of these guys that's out there constantly plugging for funds. I just put on a show every week. Life's been good to me. You guys know I used to broadcast from an area that was essentially a former refugee camp in Jordan. So we've come to you under very difficult times. Right now, life is good for us. We've had good sponsors for a long time now. Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn over at Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club, has sponsored now the Cat Report at $100 each, you know, all the way out through the end of the year now. So with that money, we've been able to buy and invest in product to make this show better for the listener, Mike. As you know, the listener is the most important part. And we feel very grateful to be able to give it. But what a lot of you guys out there listening don't know is that we were thinking of closing the show, actually, at the end of this year. This last year, we were thinking of closing the show, and I had some conversations with Mike, and Mike kind of got me a little bit convinced to carry on, because it was in the darkest part of winter. I'm away from home. I'm in Saudi Arabia. The numbers didn't seem to be there. As you know, we don't do this because it's for our health. We do it for the audience. If the audience isn't there, there's no reason to be bothering. We can go live our life and do something different. But Mike, you kept this show going and got me out of the blues, so to speak, to where we're back at feeling fine and happy again and happy to be doing the show.
Gee, I didn't realize all that. Gosh, I'm feeling good about myself again. Thanks so much for passing that on. But as you know, I meant every word of that. But on the other hand, I understand. I understand this. You know, we have one life to live, and somewhere we'd like to have a little fun. Hey, by the way, I've got a thought for you. I know you can't do it, but it's still a thought. How about taping 2 weeks' worth of Saturday programs? And how about something like this? You've heard of these cruises people take. They go off for a week or so and just take a cruise. There's also these individuals who book passengers that want to hear them speak, and they bring together enough people that they actually have these small confabs, these little conventions. You know, I think if you said, hey, let's invite our fans, our listening audience, those who can afford it, those who have the time, and let's say we sail from, say, Italy to Malta, and from Malta to Palma de Mallorca.
We'll be accused of trying to help smuggle in African American.
I don't think so.
You got to pick a different destination.
But can you, imagine?
You know what's funny about that line of reasoning is I met with the son of MUFON, the mother who runs MUFON, the something UFO, something network MUFON. And I met the son back in, he was a pool player. I met him in Hollywood. You know, this is a entertainment business at the end of the day. And I met him in Hollywood. And I was telling my story, as I've told some of my story to you and actually to the audience too. And he was sitting there talking to me. He says, you know, that's fascinating. And he said to me, how much do you charge to speak? And I was back then so stupid and dunce, I didn't know what he meant. You know, but what he was really asking me is, how much do we need to book you per day to come speak at MUFON? And I was too stupid to get it till like 6 months later. I said, oh, boy, you just had the MUFON people there talking to you to bring you on to the MUFON network so you can speak at MUFON events, and you are too stupid to even know the opportunity.
Well, things have changed. Things have changed. Now, I don't think you were ever stupid personally, but maybe you didn't understand.
I didn't understand that one. So for me, it's stupid, okay? I wasn't stupid, but it was stupid for me not to grasp that I was just being invited by somebody who's really placed within MUFON to be part of the MUFON. And what a different world it would have been if I had actually gotten into that network and been able to play there.
Yeah, you know, but I'm semi-serious about the Mediterranean cruise thing. People, your listeners, we would love to actually get to meet you and to mingle with you and rub shoulders with other people. You've got some of your callers, by the way. They could almost, you could almost book them for an interview with your program. Frank and Lenny and people like that coming on. These people are knowledgeable, man. I mean, you're not talking to a dumbed-down bunch of people out there. These people are... very smart people, but the cruise idea. You know exactly what I'm talking about. You do it for about a week, and
I do know. You know what? I'll tell you what I'll do next summer. Maybe I'll have to give that some thought because we start contracts. I'm under contract again through May of next year already. So it's already the end of the summer. Obviously, couldn't do it. But maybe that's something that we could think about is promoting a fetch cruise or something to come hear me speak, because actually it's kind of, I'm actually can be even more enthralling live if you kind of like just get me going, turn my motor on and let it go.
Yeah, and I know how easy it is to come up with ideas. The real sticking point is organizing such a thing. Well, I could tell you this pretty straight. I would help you do something like that. I used to have a tour business, not a cruise business, but a tour business, buses, things like that. So I've got a little bit of knowledge on that. But I think probably pretty quickly you could probably get 50 people. You probably have to set some kind of a limit, but 50 people because...
you're making me sound like Cernovich. He's superstar and he's big. I don't know who Mike Cernovich is.
I think I've heard of this guy, yeah.
He's like a big internet sensation right now. Mm-hmm. He tried to put together a big gathering in Washington, D.C. between alt-light and alt-right, and he was representing the alt-light, and he had like 20 people show up.
Ouch.
You know?
Ouch. Yeah.
You know, come on, dude. You're competing out there against the alt-right, and you got 20 people showing up? That's not a good thing.
Yeah, I think we could get some sort of package deal, 20, 50, 70 people. Maybe 100 would be the bucket, the top. But it's a possibility. It's something that, you know, we're with you every Saturday or whenever you're on, starting Thursday. But to actually meet and talk and have panel discussions and get the advice and stuff.
No, the main thing is I get out of Jordan, I have a beer.
Out of a beer?
You come out of Saudi Arabia, you have a beer. Come on, dude. You got to have a beer.
Yeah, I get it.
Oh, come on. Saudi is like as dry as you can get, and you can go to the various expatriate areas where they make this stuff in their bathtubs, basically, and it'll like probably kill you if you drink too much. So you just don't drink in Saudi?
You know, that drive me kind of nuts. Now, I don't drink much at all. I did have a few last night. But it's knowing that I couldn't have any. It'd probably drive me nuts. And then I would want it even more, of course. But
well, then actually, you just be smart and forget about it. Hey, when's your next book coming out? What's the title, project the title, and when do you expect your next book to come out?
I'm hoping to, I always set these unreasonable goals, but I'd like to have it done by the first of the year, Christmas, whatever, somewhere in that area. But the book is, working title is Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. And I've been working on it pretty seriously now the last several months, and I'm getting close to finishing the Nagasaki and Hiroshima chapter. I think it'll be a good book. I'm hoping, and I'm going to work my butt off to make sure. I think it will be similar to Hellstorm. In fact, it will be kind of a follow-up to Hellstorm. And in this case, of course, the subtitle would suggest I'm bringing in Japan to show that, oh, man, you know, it wasn't just Germany. Now, Germany got the rawest of the raw deals, but Japan, it was something else, too, just something quite the firebombings. I didn't realize we firebombed Japan, too, all the cities. Tokyo, they just kept firebombing, tried to destroy it. In fact, most people don't know, but there was a third atom bomb about ready to be delivered to the Marianas, where the B-29 ports were at the bases. And they were going to drop that on Japan. Like, hey, wait a minute. They just went through a firestorm that killed anywhere an estimated 100 to 200,000 people. Now they're going to drop a damned atom bomb on them, too? I mean, but, oh, by the way, one other little anecdote people didn't know is that they had ordered another 8 atomic bombs. And, of course, they were just going to saturate Japan with atomic weapons and radiation and all the other nice things. But Japan, yeah, the story about Japan is just about as compelling as the story of Germany. And so it should be a very good book.
All right. With that, Mike, thanks for coming on, sharing a little bit on our birthday here. Andrew Joyce from the OccidentalObserver.net is coming next. All right, everybody, a busy schedule today, so we're kind of like skipping through bumper music. Also, just because I'm not ready. I'm just trying to keep everything flowing here. Anyways, it's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I think our archiver is going to be happy today because you won't have so much editing to do because I keep forgetting the bumper music. Join us in the chat room, insidetheeyelive.com. That's insidetheeyelive.com. Click on the live chat button. I haven't been promoting it today, but obviously a good crowd there. Great place to just chill, listen to the show, meet like-minded people and all that kind of fun stuff. And you guys know each other for the most part, so everybody behaves. So it's been a pretty good chat room. Joining me now, I believe from Ireland, but somewhere in the UK area, is Mr. Andrew Joyce. He has a PhD in history and literature. He is an editor at the Washington Summit Publishers. He is a contributor to the Occidental Observer, which is theoccidentalobserver.net, and he's the father of 3 dissident and a European. You can follow him on Twitter at AJ Occidental. That is AJ Occidental. I do. He's got a great timeline. And quite frankly, Andrew, first, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Thanks for the invite.
Your timeline, I'll be honest, is one of the best timelines for anybody following European-centric Jewish question issues. I'm surprised you don't have a million followers.
Well, thank you very much for the compliment. I did have a Twitter about a year ago, and all I posted on it was literally just like profiles of Jewish anti-whites. That's all I posted. There was very little in terms of writing or commentary on my part. It was just basically the person's name, what kind of books that they're publishing, and where they teach, and that's it. And I posted this information for about 500 to 600 individuals, and I think inside a week I got like 10,000 followers. I mean, it just spread like wildfire, and then predictably it set all kinds of alarm bells going, and it was shut down, and the Forward ran a piece saying that it was a neo-Nazi hit list and basically making all kinds of dangerous accusations and aspersions about the intentions behind the list, when in fact it was really just it was my attempt at mimicking the lists that the SPLC produced, that the ADL produced. That's you know, I wasn't writing anything that was different in terms of content for what they were doing. And all I was doing was just putting up pictures of these people, and the whole thing was shut down. So I actually went off Twitter for a long time, almost a year. And then I relaunched. And when I relaunched and went back onto Twitter, I decided that I would just adopt a bit more of a mix of content and certainly not replicate what I'd done before. But yes, people seem to like the kind of content that I put out. Nothing that I'm putting up there is overly complex. It's just really simple stuff. And, you know, I'm asking some simple questions. I'm pointing some kind of simple things to me anyway out that other people might find interesting. I mean, I posted a tweet earlier today where there was like half a dozen of these top anti-racism textbooks, and they all apparently were written by Jewish authors. So I just tweeted, I took a screenshot of all of the different ones and merged them all together and just tweeted out saying, what's going on here? You know, we got all these people promoting diversity. All of them seem to be Jewish. That doesn't seem very diverse to me. Should we look at this? Is this worthy of looking into? And that's what I try and do in my work. That's more or less the limits of my intentions with all this stuff. Is I'm just kind of poking and prodding people and suggesting to them that they might want to look into this stuff on a deeper level because it's interesting. You know, it's there are a lot of coincidences here, and I think it's at least worthy of peeling back some layers, giving something a second look, ignoring some of the conditioning that's been put on us, where we have this knee-jerk reaction of not wanting to revisit some of this stuff. And I'm just there as a kind of a gadfly type figure, just poking and prodding and saying, look, let's revisit this. So, it seems to be going well. I've been back on Twitter, I think, 4 weeks now, and I've got, just the last check, just over 6,000 followers. So there's some momentum building, and the more people that follow, the better, and they can all get some insight into some of the things that I find interesting.
Yeah, it's a great timeline. If you haven't seen it again, at AJ Occidental, check that out. Definitely give this guy Andrew a follow. Regarding your timeline being taken down, the earlier account being taken down, I didn't know that. I was thinking about a comment recently with Megyn Kelly interviewing Vladimir Putin in Russia. And Vladimir Putin talked about how all of this Russia is like anti-Semitism, blaming Jews for everything. And I thought, you know, Putin, you need to kind of like shut your trap, because those who complain the most about this, we have reasons for it. And it's not for you to diminish the reasons why we are talking this. And here's a case in point. You're not blaming Jews, and as you're not irrationally blaming Jews for your failures, as they like to say, but they're actually targeting and sabotaging our efforts. And how much sabotage, obviously Twitter is one of those, but how much sabotage do you notice out there about people or against people that are pushing Jewish question issues, pro-European issues? Do you see a lot of sabotage?
I see a lot of sabotage. I mean, one of my good friends, of course, is Dr. Kevin MacDonald, who's now retired from the University of Southern California at Long Beach. But his work, which I came across when I was quite young, still a teenager, and read and digested and integrated with a lot of my other reading, his work struck me as incredibly professional and profoundly convincing. There was nothing in it which could be regarded as insightful or demeaning or abusive or insulting or threatening. But the kind of attacks that Kevin MacDonald was subjected to by the Southern Poverty Law Center in particular, but also the ADL, which did a huge kind of hit piece article in which they misrepresented his work, and in which the content of which actually was quite insightful. But the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, made repeated efforts to engage with his colleagues at University of Southern California to try and get him fired. The first round of efforts at this was unsuccessful, so they repeated it. And when that didn't work, and MacDonald, of course, was a tenured professor, they started using more and more abstract methods. He was smeared in the press. You're looking at this, I mean, with all due respect to Kevin MacDonald, but you know, a not very well-known American academic, but even in the United Kingdom, he was making some of the newspapers with these lurid headlines like neo-Nazi's favorite academic and stuff like this. And again, his work was only referred to in the most disparaging and misrepresentative forms.
Yeah, what frustrates me, Andrew, about all this is because I'm not, although Kevin's been on my show, by the way, more than a couple times, so I probably got to bring him back soon. But and I'm from LA also. We kind of hang out around the same neighborhoods. But my issue now is with, and perhaps you can share your twist with it with the audience here, because we try to educate people at the same time, is when you hear the Jewish media, when you hear politicians saying, you know, they want to blame you, in other words, the individual, for your own failures. So they'll come out, you've seen the rhetoric, you're just not taking responsibility for your own failures. And it's really important at this stage, because we are the ones who are being targeted, for the audience to understand that no, the issue is sabotage, and link it immediately in their minds to put the issue back onto these Jewish organizations.
Hmm. Well, what you're referring to there is basically like they're pathologizing those who criticize them in an effort to dismiss a legitimate critique. There are a number of ways in which this is done. But the first one, and the one that annoys me most actually, is this habit that they have of, if you make even like one comment that is critical of Jews, you get this refrain back, which is that you're obsessed with Jews. Now, we've got academics out there who will spend like 40 years working on some obscure aspect of Napoleon's foreign policy. But we don't say that he's obsessed with it. That's just kind of his life's work. He views that as important. It's worthy of study. He investigates it, and that's his work. But yeah, if you were to devote, you know, the same level of attention to Jews, or even much less, as I said, even if you make one stinging critique, or exactly, you're obsessed with Jews. I mean, sometimes I get people replying to my tweets, and they're the most banal, simple observations, but people just will tweet back like, "Oh, you must be a Jew obsessed," and I feel like getting into an exchange with them. But Twitter's just not the place to do that. But, you know, you could come back with so many things. Like, you know, where is this coming? Why are you calling me an obsessive? Why is that your instinct? Who's educated you to do this? Because it doesn't arise spontaneously. From school onwards, we're educated to believe that if you bring up the Jewish question or Jewish influence, then you're some kind of weird conspiracy theorist, or there's something esoteric about the subject, or you're some kind of crank, or you're mentally ill. Jews have developed to a fine art the pathologizing of any criticism against them. A while back, I would say maybe two, three years ago, I wrote an article for the Occidental Observer about a book written by a psychiatrist, or self-styled psychiatrist, called Theodore Isaac Rubin. And he wrote a book called Antisemitism, A Disease of the Mind. And the book is a fascinating example. In terms of its content, it's useless because its theory is junk. It says that, you know, just like what you said there earlier, if you come up with a criticism of Jews, then it's because you've got social status anxiety, you're not performing well in your own life, you're unsuccessful, so you're projecting your failures onto Jews, and you're kind of scapegoating them for your own personal inadequacies.
Yeah.
That has always struck me as being so insidious and so untrue. I look at myself.
Dishonest, you know, unfair, insidious. It's like, screw you guys.
Yeah.
This is war.
Yeah, exactly. But I look at my own history. I'm not boasting or anything, but I've done very well for myself. I'm largely self-made. I wasn't born into an incredibly wealthy family. You know, but I earned my PhD. I make a good living. I have a very beautiful wife. I have three wonderful, healthy kids. I live in a nice home. And in I guess all aspects of how you would measure someone's social success, I do very well. And but this issue of Jewish influence and the Jewish question interests me greatly. And, you know, I'm not projecting any inadequacies here, as I say, because I don't have any. But when you look into the lives of some of these people who are writing some of these books, they themselves are deeply psychologically neurotic. It's something that you find to a very heightened and strong degree, actually, within the Jewish community. There's a high rate whenever statistics have been gathered of neuroticism, bipolar disorder, and depressive illnesses. And I would also say that Jews have been, particularly in the last century, typified by social status anxiety, the same thing that they accused Gentiles have been worried about. When you look at magazine articles, for example, from the 1920s, 1930s, whenever the second generation of Russian Jewish immigrants begins to integrate into or sort of semi-assimilate into Western society, there's lots of commentary. And bear in mind, the press was still reasonably free at this point. There was lots of commentary on the kind of social climbing, desperate social grasping of Jews at that point. They wanted to get into the Anglo golf clubs. They wanted to be seen to be rich. They flaunted their wealth. And all of it was internal anxieties and neuroses being played out in a behavioral sense. So what we're seeing here is a kind of, they're accusing us of projecting, but really they're wildly projecting themselves. But it has a very profound and important impact in terms of our dissemination of justified critiques of Jewish influence, because we find it very difficult to penetrate the mass market of ideas with our observations, simply because the mass market of ideas is dominated and to a large extent monopolized by either Jewish intellectuals or leftists who are following the ideas of Jewish intellectuals alive or dead. So we are, in a sense, paralyzed by the exact type of behavior that you were describing there, where we are constantly having to fight against the idea that we are obsessive, that we are projecting our own inadequacies, that our theories are crackpot or have no basis in reality. So, yes, that is important. If discussing this is in some way educational for listeners, then certainly it's a very, very valuable topic to discuss.
Another issue, of course, is just income. Everybody has to make a living doing what they do. And, you know, they talk to us, you know, I just like to poke fun at Jews because I don't give a crap about them, to be honest with you. They poke fun at us about how, you know, we're not successful, blah, blah. You know, we don't care because we know what we have, right? But what I'm noticing out there in the public arena, Andrew, and I'm sure you're noticing the same, is that they want to make it to where if you even criticize a Jewish person by saying their fingernail might be too long, they want to fire you, get you cut from your job, you know, all the crap that they pull. Yet fortunes, Andrew, fortunes and fortunes are being made obsessing about white civilization, European culture, and its destruction. And people haven't really started, people aren't focusing yet on this type of pendulum where this, you know what I mean? One's over heavy and one's really light at the top. I don't know how to explain it in words for you, but I think you get it. Where on one side, you want to dry it up to where there's no income, and then on the other, Jews are feeding fortunes into all this anti-white, anti-European propaganda.
They are. It's kind of a vicious circle in a way. Yes, they ultimately, you know, a lot of these Jewish intellectuals want to, in a sense, bankrupt.
By the way, everybody, we put intellectuals in quotation marks just to
make it clear, you know. Yeah. And theorists might be another word. They certainly do want to create an environment in which it's economically suicidal to criticize Jews. And this is not something that's new. Henry Ford writes about it in The International Jew when he describes the monopolization of the advertising industry, where basically you've got such a inner microeconomy of Jewish wealth concentrated in very important and vital areas of the economy that it's possible to create inordinate harm far out of proportion to the size of the Jewish community simply by targeting advertising boycotts or the redirection of income.
This is how they put the New York Herald out of business. They Ford talked about this. I think they back then, 1918 or before, they withdrew like $600,000 per year in revenue to try to put that guy out of business because they didn't like how he was reported in the news.
Exactly, that's a great example. But they do this, but yes, they also are intent on making lots of money from us as well. One of the things that I've always paid a lot of attention to is Jews and money lending. And of course, this is another one of those things, one of those areas of Jewish behavior in history and also in the modern day, in which you're told that it's a complete stereotype. It's just a trope. It's a canard. There's no real basis to it. There's a tiny grain of truth that Jews might have once lent money at interest in medieval times, but it was only because they were banned from pursuing other occupations.
Yeah.
And of course, this is, again, it's completely false. I mean, their position on this is so contrary to factual evidence that it would be laughable if it wasn't also so damaging. But I've investigated at length Jewish involvement in money lending in history. But more importantly, I think it's worth keeping the focus on the fact that this is ongoing. I mean, I did in-depth research into the modern payday loan money lending industry, and it was almost...
That's predatory, the modern payday loan business. That's about as predatory as it gets.
It's extremely predatory. We're talking about over 1,000% APR at some companies. There was one which became absolutely notorious in the United Kingdom, and it was called Wonga, and was owned by two South African Jews, Errol Damlin and a guy called Jonty Horwitz. And these are guys who were, say, born into South African Jewish families, went to Israel, were trained up in finance, worked for some investment banks, turned up, you know, in quite obscure circumstances in the United Kingdom, very quickly set up these payday money lending operations and became embroiled in all kinds of scandals at the amounts of interest that were being charged about charges and fees to customers' accounts, which were invented out of thin air, to the point where the Financial Standards Authority conducted an investigation, was on the cusp of issuing criminal or civil charges against the owners, who then suddenly sold off some of their shares or took obscure routes out of the business end of things and kind of disappeared into the Jewish community, of course, with buckets of cash, which they then filtered through into Jewish causes like Jewish Care and other examples of Jewish philanthropy. But Wonga was just one example. I mean, in my really detailed, really long three-part essay at the Occidental Observer, I looked into Easy Cash. There was a guy called Al Goldstein who ran Avant Credit, but one of the other big payday loan companies in the United States. It was the same story in Australia. Money lending there was run by a guy called Philip Cohen, and one of the world's biggest payday money lending companies, which in the UK trades under the name The Money Shop, was run by a guy called Philip Weiss, again, CEO, Jewish. He was able to get interest-free loans from this company, a CEO, to the tune of like $5 million or more. Again, interest-free, but the interest rates that they're charging to their customers would make your eyes water. I mean, painful levels of interest. But the networks, they're all interconnected, these payday loan companies. They operate, you know, there might be one kind of head company, but it will operate in multiple countries under multiple different names. So Philip Weiss was running, I think, about 20 smaller companies in the UK, just all under different names. And you when you do this, you obscure ownership, you obscure the roots of responsibility, and it makes it very difficult for the person who actually goes and takes one of these predatory loans to figure out what's going on, who they actually owe the money to, and to start to formulate a kind of worldview as to what's happening to them, why they're losing their home, why people are coming and removing their possessions because they can't meet the payments. And again, we're supposed to believe that the idea that Jews are moneylenders is just some kind of, it's just some bigoted stereotype.
Yeah, but this has been reported through history. You know, the Russians were complaining about this in the 1800s, how the Jews had the peasantry literally under a thumb, where they couldn't breathe anymore because of the money lending problems. So this is like, we have so much historical reference showing these problems, and let's not even bother with the Federal Reserve, right? You know,
Yeah.
And all these various reserve banks that were lending money to ourselves for interest. I've still never understood the logic of that one. That's just kind of like stupid statesmanship. The Jewish question, of course, you deal with it. How long have you been dealing with the Jewish question? Not really the Jewish question. Do you deal with the Jewish question or the Jewish problem? I like to segregate between the two. Do you deal with the Jewish question or the Jewish problem?
I would say the Jewish question.
And how do you define
it? The way I would define that is it's the question. I always define the Jewish question as multiple questions. You know, it's kind of, we open a door and we end up being faced with five or six more doors. But the aspects of it are basically, I'm involved in, first of all, advocating for the fact that there is a Jewish question. The question is, do Jews possess influence and power in our societies that is out of proportion to their numbers in the population and out of proportion to what we would regard as being appropriate? In other words, is it excessive? And if it is excessive, and if it is inappropriate, is it counterproductive to our interests as a people? And my answer to both of those would be yes. You know, it is disproportionate. It is counterproductive. The question is then asked, well, what do we do about it? Now, this is something that is lesser discussed with people looking into this issue. And I would interpret just in my own mind. Everyone will interpret these phrases in a different way, but for those who describe themselves as being involved in researching or writing about the Jewish problem, they tend to be the people who are more on the side of making proposals as to solutions or ways of redressing this influence. I'm in the business of drawing attention to Jewish influence, Jewish behavior, especially by contextualizing it within history. So if I'm going to write something about Jews and moneylending, I want to place it within a format that is fundamentally historical and tease out trends, explanations, and instances which are helpful to understanding more what's going on in the present. So that's my perspective anyway. That's how I see what I'm doing. Someone else might come along and say, no, I see you more as a Jewish problem guy. And, you know, we can get into all kinds of debates about semantics. But really what we're doing here is we're talking about Jews, and that in itself is breaking a huge taboo.
Now, to the obviously the OccidentalObserver.net, they come to you, they know exactly what they're looking for in that content. To a radio show like this, we've got our core, they come for probably the same thing. But we have a big audience that's coming to just learn more and more. One of the things I've learned is that at least based on Twitter and other avenues of inquiry, I don't know if that's the right word there, but other avenues of questions where I see people having questions about what you and I might be doing, is they seem to think that this is a modern phenomena, that, you know, us talking about these issues is new in history. But as you and I both know, this is a very there's a long history of this discussion in Western civilization. Can you kind of share some of your thoughts and give some perspective of that for people who might be new to this and just don't know about it?
Well, it's absolutely ancient. I mean, my own expertise in terms of sort of a functional and business-like knowledge of this would go back as far really as the Middle Ages. That's where I really start to have a deep knowledge of what's going on. But I have written as far back as the writing of the Pentateuch, or the first five books of the Old Testament. I wrote a piece called Exodus Redux at the Occidental Observer, which was revisiting the book of Exodus from the perspective of this is a document that was written in response to critiques of Jews. And basically what we are seeing today and what we discussed earlier, where Jews are kind of saying, oh, that's just projecting or all this, that this has a really ancient pedigree. And it goes back to an Egyptian priest, a Greek-Egyptian priest called Manetho, who wrote... I can't remember the exact dates offhand. Again, this ancient period isn't really my area of expertise.
People can look
they can look up the dates. They can look up the article. But Manetho basically wrote, based on the ancient Egyptian king lists, a narrative account of a group that was widely believed to be the Jews that arrived into the Egyptian kingdom from the eastern border, that became a kind of a nation within a nation, that it pursued its own goals, its own interests, that the population grew rapidly, that it was a subversive element, and that it was contributing to the decline of Egyptian society at that time. And that as a result of the subversive activities of this group, and the fact that it also started developing diseases, including leprosy, it was banished and exiled and expelled from the land of Egypt. Well, a scholar by the name of Gemirkin actually wrote an account.
Andrew, we're going to call this out there. It's Edge with Andrew Jones, Inside the Eye Live, Intelligent Media for the Politically Aware. Excuse me. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, Intelligent Media for the Politically Aware. Again, for I know we got a big OccidentalObserver.net following base here. Yeah, a lot of people follow the OccidentalObserver.net as well as this show. So, Andrew, you're actually very well received right now in the chat room. They had no idea you were coming on because, as you know, we booked this late. So appreciate you coming on, and also your fans over at the OccidentalObserver.net, I'm sure, are appreciative.
Well, that's very nice to hear.
Yes. So we have a phone call coming in. It's an open call. 321 area code. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Hello, Fetch. Do you hear me?
You're coming in very clear.
All right. Well, you know what, Fetch? I don't call with disrespect. You've known me for a long time, Chewbacca from Liberty Farm, when there were very few of us around. Oh, very few.
Yeah, there was.
You know, I mean, you know, this vast expanse of people, I mean, they're all amateurs to me because, you know, there were only a couple handfuls of us back then.
Yeah, I know. People don't really know the history, do they? You and I go way, way, way back. Over 10 years.
Yeah, and many other talk show hosts do, which I'm not going to say who they were. You know, how about Jacob Judicial? You know, I don't think there's anybody any better anywhere on the internet than Jacob Judicial was. And you know what? I've been friends with him for, I don't know, what, 15 years? Maybe close to 20 years. I don't know. But, you know, I don't mean disrespect by this guy who claims he's a, you know, he's a real doctor and this and that. But then he equates Jews with Israelites, which I know people are going to go, you know, here it goes. But you know what? Jews, they're not Israelites. Now, if you're going to claim that Jews are Israelites when you say Jews are in Egypt, you're just downright wrong, man. And my goal is to be correct. I want to be right, man. I don't want to sell out to this issue because it fits into my agenda. I want to be right on everything because that's how we get the truth. Now, thank you for my time. Yeah, and, you know, right, I wish you guys would talk about Trump, about all his Jewish connections. His brother was in a Jewish fraternity. All his kids are married to Jews. His veterans, I told you last 2 weeks ago, his veterans administrator is a Jew. I mean, why aren't we hearing this from these other shows? They're just saying, oh, his daughter is married to a Jew. No, his whole family. It's a completely different ballgame. So these people have to be obfuscators that are saying, oh, it's just his daughter. Oh, and this guy just crept in to take everything over. And Trump just doesn't know. I mean, he's too stupid to understand what's going on. Come on, quit protecting this guy. All right, thank you. I'm done.
Okay. You know, Chewbacca and I go way back, Andrew, back to the days when there was no streaming media, when the wars were being fought on forums, believe it or not. He and I go way, 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 way back, to say the least. So this Israelite issue, of course, to me, it's all parabolic anyways. It's a bunch of parables to explain Jewish behavior written through different mediums. What's your take on what he just said, this Israelite issue?
Well, it's one of the complexities of our movement. You know, religion is probably the sort of the fundamental dividing point. It's a dangerous topic for us as a movement to get into in any detail. It's sensitive, and for that reason, it's mostly avoided. But if the caller had really listened to what I'd said, he would have, you know, realized that I wasn't saying categorically that Jews were Israelites or vice versa. Actually, the issue has no importance to me. I don't care if they were Israelites. I don't care if they weren't Israelites. It doesn't bother me. I'm more concerned with the here and now, with the evidence that presents itself to my own eyes directly. I'm not spiritually invested. I'm not religiously invested in these arguments. I understand that some people have come at it from a creativity side of things, where or they come at it from the Khazar theory or any number of ways of sort of approaching this topic of the ancient origins of the Jews, or theories about the ancient origins of the Jews. And I understand that there's some sensitivities there. And certainly my comments exploring the work of Russell Gamirkin, who actually produces, I mean, even Russell Gamirkin's book, which is the one I'm referring to, he doesn't say the Jews were the Israelites. What he says is that there was an ancient group which was known to the Egyptians as the Hyksos, who were a subversive group, and that the book of Exodus was written by a bunch of rabbis as a kind of propaganda response to the account of Manetho, the ancient Greek-Egyptian priest. I mean, I'm all for anyone to come up with a counter-argument, but please outline it in a book and stuff. You know, we can't get into these kind of arguments with via tweets or even in phone conversations. You know, Gamirkin's written a book.
The real issue, Andrew, is for those who are trying to grasp this, is that a lot of people, as we discussed earlier, Jews will put on this idea that we're just obsessed, we're irrational, we're just projecting, you know. But our point, our position is, look, it's an existential battle. It is aeonics old. This is something that our 7, 10, 15 generation ago kin were talking about. So this is nothing new, and it's time for people to start waking up.
Yeah, we don't need to get hung up on the specifics or even to take offense at some of the specifics. We can paint in broad strokes here, and we can see everything that we need in a bigger picture. There's no point in us picking fights with each other. And I don't attack anyone on their
detail that's speculative anyways.
Yeah, exactly. But we don't need to attack each other on minutiae or on sensitive topics. So normally we would avoid things like that there. But I respect where the caller's coming from. And I actually agree with him a lot on what he said there about Trump and how we're kind of window dressing, really, if we just focus on Kushner. There are some more complex issues going on here. But again, we need to come up with as much of an evidence-based argument as we can and try and tease out some of the more obscure things that are going on. And again, it's a Jewish question. We're trying to question, we're trying to probe, we're trying to pull things out into the light and have them discussed and move forward from that. But thanks to the caller.
Yes, of course. And Chewbacca and I go way back, so it's great to have him call anyone. Literally, he and I were like early warriors long before people were fighting. He remembers me, I think, probably going back to 2006, 2005. Even 2004 on the internet forums, long before there was such a thing as streaming radio. So you can imagine that.
And back when I was in high school. So
there you go. We were getting banned every other week back then. You know, it was like you could even breathe without them banning you back then. The Trump issue, I hear it a lot. Every time I try to mention something positive, I get hit with this Trump issue. We're going to kind of change gears here. But you're in Ireland, so it's not your issue. It's an American issue. But what Trump brought that we didn't have, and this is the positive, was the change in the rhetoric. And I'm trying to say, guys, okay, hang on. Things aren't going to change overnight. You're not going to get rid of Jewish power overnight. But let's focus on the rhetorical sea change that we've had, and let's start to try to make some changes. You've got an immigration problem. We have an immigration problem. These are battles that we seem to have some, sympathy with within certain parts of our governments, not yours perhaps. But in other words, we have to start to take some success and start to build. To me, I don't know if your opinion, but are people just being too irrational here? I don't want to say irrational, but just not... My English is failing me here as the mosque goes off in the background. In other words, they're just not being pragmatic enough. Guys, be patient. yeah, we know this is going on, but the rhetorical sea change, isn't this critical at this stage of the battle?
Yeah, first of all, I'm more invested in Trump and the United States than, I guess, the introduction there would have suggested. That's no fault of your own, but actually I have an American wife and all three of my kids are American citizens, and I've lived...
Well, then you're just as invested as we are, okay? Yeah. I take it all back.
I might be calling right now from Ireland, but I've lived most of my adult life in the United States and will be returning there pretty shortly, actually.
Okay, take it all back. That's my
idea. But, I'm quite invested in how Trump does for America. You make a great point, and it's, as a movement, we're very suspicious. And we're very good at being critical, because we have to be. We have to fight our corner. We have to look for people who are trying to subvert our message or who are trying to inveigle their way in among our people for their interests. So we have a healthy suspicion and a healthy skepticism, but we can at times take it too far to the point where it precludes us seeing clearly where some benefits or positives may be. It makes things very hard for us. There's a lot of mental effort. I mean, even from my own perspective, when I first heard, when Trump really started to get going in terms of success, during some of the early primaries and things that he was doing, I wrote a piece for the Occidental Observer, which was very, very skeptical. I framed it again within a historical context of Jewish intermarriage into elites. So I looked at it as there being huge and very loud alarm bells ringing because of the marriage of Ivanka Trump to Jared Kushner. And I know Chewbacca there was saying that we can focus too much on that. And I agree with that. But the intermarriage in itself is historically important. It's important today, because the Clintons are another case, with intermarriage at very high levels with Jewish families, and there's a binding and an interlocking of interest there, which is impossible to disentangle because blood is permanent and ethnic ties are very strong, particularly with an ethnocentric group like the Jews. So I was very, very skeptical. Even when everyone else seemed to really be going pro-Trump, I was very, very reserved. I was very, very hesitant. And then when he won, I kind of got caught up in the enthusiasm of, because I didn't believe that he would win. And I thought, wow, he actually did it. Okay, maybe something positive is going to come from this. And for a while, I rode that particular bolt of lightning. Now we're in this kind of, it's not an anticlimactic period, but it's a period certainly where all of us are pausing and taking stock, and we're reflecting on what he has achieved and what he may potentially achieve. And also, all judgments seem to be reserved. I think that to expect Trump to deliver even 20% of what we really want is too much. We're not going to see that, not given the wider political context. Don't forget that Trump is just one man, and that so much of the system remains in hawk and under the control of deeply vested interests that will not relinquish.
We need a huge, honestly, Andrew, we need a huge purge. Until we get that purge, it's going to be very difficult.
Of course. So in the meantime, we're kind of grasping for the crumbs that fall from the table. And we're going to get a little bit more or a few more crumbs falling from the table from Trump than we are with Clinton. That doesn't mean we should be satisfied. That doesn't mean that we give up. It's always been my philosophy that we do everything with desperation. We act desperately, and we push our cause with desperation, because although at times it can seem like what we're doing is because we do our radio shows and we've got this kind of micro insular culture, that what we're doing is somehow hobbyist or part-time. What we're talking about here is the survival of our entire ethnic group, and not just the United States, but throughout the world. In other words, if we fail, it's lights out, gone forever. So we need to act in a manner that is conducive to the threat that we are faced with, and that means acting with desperation. And we need to not give up just because we see Trump there and he's saying, make America great again. No, until we see America made great again, we do not let up. In fact, we just keep pushing even more intensively. We should be pushing and harassing Trump in any way that we can to deliver more on the wall or reverse migration, by which I mean
more,
you know, increasing deportation.
More on purging.
Exactly.
The government itself. Literally, when he says drain the swamp, drain it, dude. Don't mess around with us. From the 503 area code, welcome to Inside the iLife.
Hey, Dennis, this is your friend Wolf from Portland, Oregon, the lesbian capital of America.
Welcome.
Hey, I wanted to ring in on a couple of things on you were talking about the tranny issue, and it kind of ties into what Trump did this week. So this is real interesting that ties into this city, because it's a real pro, what I feel is a Jewish contrived movement to this tranny movement. But one is, you know, he ordered that the trannies would not be allowed to be in the military, which is real interesting because, you know, I do a lot of writing. You know, I told you about my site, wolfwatch.com, and I write about disability issues a lot and targeting. And, you know, in my opinion, the trannies are people who have mental impairments. They should be considered as disabled. The military doesn't let disabled people in the military at this point, and to any jobs, even though I think they could probably do some of them. And why are trannies allowed in? So I find that real hypocritical. But it's interesting that some of the lesbians in this community, at least, are standing up against the tranny movement a little bit, saying, you know, you're not real women. You don't deserve the same rights. And this other decision that the Trump administration did this week, when the Department of Justice said that they would not qualify trannies under Title VII. Well, that's the part of the Civil Rights Act that protects minorities, people with disabilities, and it has protected the gay community to a point, but he said that they would not protect the tranny movement because they consider it to be they're not legitimate. And so there was a case in Connecticut where this freshman boy won the state track and field championships in 100 and 200-yard dash competing as a woman. He beat two of the senior girls there in Connecticut who now have this decision by Trump has opened up a lawsuit where they can sue the state of Connecticut and say that they should not allow this boy to participate as a girl. He beat girls. Under Title IX, they said that he was allowed to participate as a woman. So it's a real big battle coming down between within the gay community. So it's real interesting.
Okay, this is good. Thanks for the call, Wolfgang.
Sure. Thanks,
Andrew, that's a great point. I say be patient. You're not going to turn things around overnight. We know that Jewish power is well entrenched in the LGBT community. It's militant. It's anti-Western. So again, here's a case where we may have a victory on our hands, but we're sometimes too busy to notice.
Yeah, again, you know, we need to just, as well as having that kind of desperate hunger for victory, learn to be more, not appreciative, but learn to take our successes where they come into account and let that build up our esteem and our resolve, and go easy on ourselves sometimes. I think a lot of the time we're very hard on ourselves as a movement. We're very self-critical. This is like the white disease, or certainly it's a disease that has evolved in the last 50 years and has gotten more and more intense, is this self-criticism, where, you know, I hear a lot of sort of depressing comments sometimes about the movement and about those who are regarded as its intellectual, political, or social leaders. And I think that a lot of the time we just need to realize, look, we're all really working towards roughly the same goals here, and we need to work together. We need to count our achievements, take them into account, and be pragmatic, not to the extent that we become compromisers, but be pragmatic in a way that will be conducive to our success.
Do we, as I guess leaders in the pro-Western nationalism, do you see that we have to expand our market reach and try to broaden our message to reach more people?
It depends on what you mean by broaden the message. Anytime I hear something about broadening the message or taking the message to the masses, I have an instinctive knee-jerk reaction against it, because a little alarm bells ring at the back of my mind where I think that somehow this is going to mean a dilution of our message or an oversimplification of it. But at the same time, we're in a dilemma. People like you and I can sit here and we can discuss these Jewish matters in a very complex and nuanced way, and we can because we're well read in these subjects. But there are a lot of people out there who are completely fresh to this stuff, and all of it seems so big, and they're that is programmed into them to being confronted with some of this material is to retreat back to what they've been programmed with, which is to regard the material as somehow esoteric. It's conspiracy theory. It's dubious. It's incorrect or somehow morally suspect to even go near it. So that will take a lot to overcome. And I don't profess to have the answers. I'm no prophet, nor am I a genius. It's difficult for us to figure out ways to overcome that. We're still working on it. My own philosophy and my own way of approaching it is just to ask questions. It's to try and produce evidence-based analysis that is lots of facts in it, lots of citations. People, if they want to, they can go and look where I'm getting my quotes, look where I'm getting for my information, check dates, check names, and let them develop their own answers. It's difficult to mass market something like that, but there are lots of people in the movement doing different things for me that are developing all kinds of methods of cultural reach. Good luck to them. Again, we're all pulling in the same direction.
And I don't know if I should ask that, so we'll leave that question offline. I was going to ask you something that, never mind, I'll get that later. Real quick, how do people reach you? Because we're actually down to about a minute in the show here. How do people reach out to you if they'd like to email you, reach out to you? How do people reach out?
You can write to editors at theoccidentalobserver.net, or you can send me a tweet at AJ Occidental on Twitter.
Okay, everybody. Everything will be on the site. Thank you, Andrew, for coming on. Great to have you.
Pleasure.
Okay.